The WYSL stations present an hour of truth for the battered but proud people of the Empire State. From the financial and entertainment epicenter of New York City to the sleeping and empty small cities and towns of upstate, which once bustled with manufacturing, mining, and farming. We all know from inspiration, history, and nature, we deserve a return to the success and growth of generations past, a birthright being squandered by corruption in Albany, and the depredations of an insecure, scheming mountebank posing as governor, who loathes both us and himself. As liberty beckoned to enslaved peoples behind the Iron Curtain via American broadcast after World War II, we now say, believe, rise, and join us. Welcome to Radio Free New York.
Hey guys, thank you so much for joining us here on Radio Free New York. I'm your host, Andrew Hollister, and we've got a couple people in the studio today. So Bob Savage is with us as usual.
Heidi-ho.
And we've got Kevin Wilson with us as well.
Howdy.
So Kevin's a good friend. He is the chairman of the Monroe County Libertarian Party. He was active in the Sharp campaign, active in my city council campaign, and I don't know if he wants to talk about that, but I bet you he's looking for some candidates in Monroe County this year.
We sure are. Yes. Andrew.
I don't know about that, but I'm sure there are other people, so and you don't have to answer this now. We could talk about it later, but do you have any spots that you're looking for people for specifically right now for the upcoming elections?
Yeah, absolutely. So we have most of the local offices are up this year. So we have County Ledge offices that are up. There's a few open spots in County Ledge. Jim Shepard and Mark Moyo just said they're not running for re-election. We got city court judges. We got all four district seats for Rochester City Council. We have several village boards and town boards that are up, and town supervisors all across Monroe County and Livingston County as well. So if you are interested, you can message us on our Facebook page if you'd like, Monroe County Libertarian Party. Get a hold of us there at the New York State Libertarian Party page. We need people to run. We want to challenge the two-party system. We got to keep them honest, folks.
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to welcome everybody who's not just listening on the airwaves, but also our friends who are watching the stream online. I see Dan and Nathan and a few other people are starting to join the live stream here. So if you're on Twitter, Facebook, or YouTube, thank you guys so much for joining us.
Tell Nathan I love his hot dogs.
Nathan, all right, Nathan. Bob says he loves the hot dogs. So, so we're here in studio, and something that I wanted to talk about a little bit, you were on another radio show recently with some, I forget, what organization were they from?
The Democratic Socialists.
Yeah,
Rochester DSA group.
So that conversation just sparked a lot of things in my mind that I thought we could talk about that a little bit today, because one of the things that was said on that show that really just jumped right out at me was one of the people on the show said to Kevin that if Kevin wasn't using his car, it was his right to steal your car.
Sure is. And, you got to respect their honesty.
Sure, yeah. He was very upfront, very honest about it. He's like, yeah, that's my right.
I had asked him. I was trying to get him into a conversation like, well, okay, how much money is too much money? What's too much money to make for you guys? Let's put a number on it. And I had asked like a property-related question too, like, well, if I have two cars in my household, is it your right to take one if another family needs one? And they're like, yeah. Yeah, it's all right.
Well, then it's your right to take his car. Was he okay with that, or she?
I don't know. That's a great question. I mean, presumably
I walk into your house and I just get everything that's out in your fridge and take it?
Well, Bob, it'll be democratic. Come on. It's
I think it's more like larceny. But that's
kind of how I felt about it. But yeah.
It's totally fine if the government does it.
Yeah.
If the government does it, then it's okay. It doesn't matter.
Oh, well, the government's doing it. Going already, so
they sure are
in large measure.
Yeah. So I heard that conversation and I was like, you know what? There's more to talk about here. Just socialism in general, because the thing that I'm seeing very commonly is people are unhappy, and so they immediately run to just something else, right? And especially for young people, that just seems to be socialism. And they maybe don't always question why that's a bad thing. They don't really talk about what that means. And I would preface the conversation with, socialism itself isn't necessarily bad. Forced socialism is where it becomes bad. So when can socialism be good if it's volunteer-based? Well, think about putting tithe in the offering at church. That's a form of socialism. That's perfectly fine. It's
just giving, isn't it?
It's giving. Yes. That's a basic premise of volunteering to give to others, whether that's in your community or somebody else. That's totally fine. It's when it becomes at the point of a firearm or at the end of a gun, you know, it's a law, your government forcing it on you or somebody else, the majority saying you must give your stuff. That's where I think it becomes a problem.
Kind of distills down to this debate about rights, right? I mean, so what are we hearing from the socialist side? We're hearing that health care is a right. Education's a right. There's no right that exists that forces some other person to give something up, yeah. Life, liberty, or property. That's not, by definition, that can't be a right.
No, that's exactly it. If the right that you're claiming requires you to take something from someone else, right. It's not a right. Rights can only be something that's intrinsic to you. It's like speech. It's like being able to hold personal property. It's like being able to move freely and act in the market. Those are rights.
Yep.
But
yep. Yeah, so it's interesting. I mean, their idea of what rights were was their rights to stuff that you worked for.
Yes.
You know? And my idea of rights are my right to work for these things.
Yeah. Well, it's fine. It's happening to other people, Andrew, so it doesn't matter.
So it doesn't matter, yes.
And they're in the minority, so it's fine.
Yeah, and I think – didn't they – they might have even mentioned that. They're like, well, this idea is really popular right now, so it must be right. And it's like, just because it's popular doesn't mean it's a good idea or that it's right.
No, that's exactly what it is. And I said, well, it's popular and it's only going to affect like 1% of the population. And as we dove into that conversation, that became abundantly clear that that isn't true. It's going to affect me and you and middle class families everywhere. But that's the funny thing about how democracy can sometimes work if it's not curtailed with rights, fundamental rights. That's why we live in a republic, is that the majority can't take away your rights to life, liberty, and property without due process.
What you just described is democracy. It's two wolves and a sheep discussing what's for dinner.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep. And it doesn't just pertain to wealth either. It can apply to any number of situations where someone who's in the minority politically or otherwise can be subject to the will of a violent majority at the hands of a not very nice government.
Yeah. Now, it's interesting because later on, they actually accused you of just protecting rich people when you said that, you know, your stuff is your stuff, basically. And I thought that was a interesting concept, that's immediately where their thoughts went. That if you don't believe that it's okay for me to take your stuff, then therefore you must be protecting rich people. Like, poor people can't have stuff.
Yeah, right. No, it protects the rights of everyone, too. It's
exactly.
Well, especially when we get to things like the capital gains taxes and things like that, or when we start talking about taxing, like, gains from stock interest and things like that, right? Middle-class families have 401ks, too. Again, it's not just the super rich who have these things. It's average, everyday people whose retirements could be attacked by these things.
Yeah.
And the principle matters. And I even said on the show, like, I'm not even necessarily against having some form of progressive taxation, but this isn't what that was about. That's not what this conversation was heading towards. It was about punishing the rich, because to them, having wealth is immoral in and of itself.
Multiple times.
Well, I think that's a cover for their covetousness. What they want is they just want your stuff. Mm-hmm. So what they do is they come up with this rubric, you know, this idea that you having it is evil, but somehow they've got a higher purpose. And the cynicism and the, you know, illogical nature of that should be apparent.
Yeah.
But it's not. To Andrew's point, there's a lot of people who are starting to think that socialism's okay. You look at the polls among Democrats and even some Republicans, too. People are starting to say, oh, maybe capitalism isn't so great. Maybe socialism's not so bad. And I think that, like, us – we need to make sure we fight for why capitalism and free market principles are important and vital to giving us the prosperity that we've had so far.
Doesn't that proceed, though, from a fundamental misunderstanding of what socialism is? I think that particularly younger people think that socialism is Sweden, where they have a huge welfare state and they have, you know, paid, you know, single payer health care and tremendous unemployment benefits that go on for freaking ever. And but really, it's informed by capitalism. I mean, Sweden is a capitalist country. They missed that point.
Yeah. No, I love that you brought that up because Sweden actually, in a lot of freedom indexes, is more free than the United States in terms of regulatory structure.
Well, it is now. They tried the other way.
No, exactly. Well, in like the 70s and 80s, they tried to be socialist and it failed spectacularly. They couldn't pay for it. And then they switched to free market and they have a strong welfare state. And I think that's what most people think they want. There are other problems with that too, but I think that's what most people think they want. They look at Sweden and Denmark and other places like that and they say, oh, well, that's working out fine. Let's try socialism. It's not socialism.
Well, you don't have to be much of a salesman to say, well, you know, health care should be free. Hey, education should be free. Hey, you should be able to get a house mortgage for you know, pennies on the dollar and so forth. Free stuff. And they think, I think a lot of people think that that's socialism. The government is, quote, taking care of you. So you don't want a government that's intrusive, but they want a government that's big enough to give you everything that you want. And that's not the way things work.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there's another country that tried the socialism thing that's been in the news a lot lately, which is Venezuela. So there's a lot of interesting stuff going on over there, including somebody just declared their president now. Yeah. I don't know if you guys saw that or not. It's really interesting. So for those who aren't familiar. Well, actually, and Bob, you had a lot of history. We were talking about history on Venezuela and what it was like maybe 20 years ago.
Well, we're kicking it around before we went on the air. You mentioned that you wanted to talk about Venezuela, and I just mentioned I was in Venezuela in 1997. It was a cruise ship. I was on a 10-day cruise. One of the stops was in the seaport that serves Caracas, which is that's the capital. It's an inland city. It's up in the mountains. And I jokingly always called this Port Guadalacaca, but it's, you know, if you got off the ship and you wandered around this city in Venezuela in 1997, it looked like Western New York. Yeah. People were walking around, you know, in trendy clothes, and there's, you know, outdoor cafes, and there's malls, you know, with Walmart and Walgreens, and they're driving around late model SUVs, and everybody seems to be doing really well. At that time, Venezuela was the fourth largest economy and the most successful economy in the Western Hemisphere, after United States of America, Canada, and somebody else who I don't think it was Mexico was number three, might have been. But it was a very prosperous country, and now they're trapping rats so that they can conk them over the head and eat them.
Yeah,
and I'm sure that domestic animals, and there's riots over things like toilet paper and milk. Yep. And these people never, ever, I'm sure, thought in 1997 they'd end up where they are now. But this is where socialism always ends up, ladies and gentlemen, over and over and over again. And what do the proponents of socialism always tell you? Well, I know how to do it right. Nicolas Maduro said those very words, I guarantee you. So did Stalin. So did Khrushchev. So did the Castros, both of them.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's interesting because an argument that I hear come up very often for socialism is that, well, it just hasn't been tried yet. But then on the other side, they say, but it works.
Where?
But it hasn't been tried yet. So how do you know it works?
That wasn't real socialism.
Yeah, that's why I hear all the time. That wasn't real socialism because there were people involved. Yeah.
it's always personality driven. Yeah. You know, I mean, Perón, you know, in Argentina, they had the right idea. Yeah. And it just goes on and on. Mm-hmm. Robert Mugabe, it's always the same narrative over and over and over again. There's no new ideas in socialism. Notice that?
Yeah. No matter what country it's tried in, it always ends up in a similar fashion, right? There's mass oppression. You think you're going to have your political rights, and all of a sudden those start going away. Anytime you start to challenge the state and wonder why food is no longer on the shelves, you can't buy toilet paper anymore. Well, you're just a bourgeois capitalist who's threatening our socialist democracy. Into jail for you. That's how it ends up happening.
Now, what's the inflation rate in Venezuela? I think the last number I saw was 80,000%.
Wow.
Wow.
What kills me, the new talking point among people on the extreme left is that this was all caused by the United States. The United States is interfering in Venezuela, and that's the only reason why they're suffering right now.
Uh-huh. And so it's the United States' fault that the government can't pump the oil. And by the way, Venezuela has the largest oil reserves of any country within any political boundary on Earth, including Saudi Arabia.
Yep.
And they can't get it out of the ground and sell it and make money so the people don't starve?
Tremendous wealth squandered.
Yeah. Well, it's really interesting because I was looking at the election that came up recently, and why did somebody just declare that they're the president instead? And the reason is because all of the political candidates that were going up against this guy were either put in jail, they fled the country, or they were banned from running. So basically, this guy said, like, so apparently they have an election, and then they just didn't lay anybody, kind of to your point, like, oh no, you're just a capitalist, get out of here. And then they blamed it on the United States trying to interfere with their election, is what they said.
Stop spreading that CIA propaganda, Andrew.
Yep, there it is.
This is the excuse that's offered from every failed regime, from Zimbabwe to Iran to Iraq to Libya to on and on and on. Trace it all the way back to World War II, Vietnam, Korea. It's always the United States' fault.
Yep. Yeah, so I thought that was interesting, kind of on topic, and just how far, like, they've fallen under this. Like, we were talking about – somebody was telling me they don't have zoos anymore. Because all the animals have been eaten. No more zoos. They've eaten all the animals in the zoos. I don't know if that's true, but I see it all over the internet. So it must be true. Yeah, it's on the internet. It must be true. I think it was actually like a BBC article or something.
Yeah, so you got to eat that Bengal tiger really, really quick, though. Right? Before he eats you.
Yeah. He's probably hungry, too.
Yeah, I'm sure he is. Yeah. Yep. So do you have any before we leave this, anything else from that conversation that you want to hit that came up in that interview that's worth
the Democratic Socialist?
Yeah. Before we
so the big thing with the tax rates and all that stuff, because what prompted it was Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez talking about the 70% marginal tax rates, right? And with that type of tax rates and what the socialists want to do, again, this isn't about even paying for the programs, because there are better ways to do that don't involve a 70% marginal tax rate. And even if it did, we still can't afford the government that we have now. We're wasting so much money on so much stuff. A 70% tax rate is not going to bring in enough revenue to actually pay for what we're doing now. We're taking on a tremendous amount of debt to fund unsustainable bureaucracies in the federal government that take away our liberty and are putting – I don't know. Maybe I will not live long enough to have this be a problem for me. But maybe my kids will. I don't know.
It seems to be happening fast.
We'll see how long we can ride this out. It's all cool for me, but –
Well,
I'm not that old.
Well, I just want to point out as a cautionary note, Venezuela was fined 20 years ago. Yeah. And those people were all told the same lies that we're hearing from the Democrat Socialists now, which is, no, we're not proposing anything radical. No. It's just, we just need to make some fine tweaks here and there. Everything's going to be okay. Your rights are going to be fine. And now, ladies and gentlemen, behold Venezuela.
No, you're right. Life comes at you fast.
Yeah. Well, and to your point about if we can we're spending so much, can we afford it? Cheryl DeNolfo, who's the county exec of Monroe County, posted on her Facebook page earlier today that the new New York State budget is going to increase the burden on all the counties by an additional $3 million.
Yeah.
And a lot of counties are now going to be faced with the question yet again of how are they going to raise taxes to collect this money that New York State has imposed on them? So we're living it now, just in little increments. It's a little bit here, a little bit. And $3 million, sadly, in terms of our budgets, is a small amount. whereas like $3 million, I think that's a tremendous amount of money, but it represents, I think she's like 3% or something like that, maybe even less than that.
But it adds up, though, right?
No, it does. It's huge. But $3 million for Monroe County, that's highly populated, is a small percentage of the budget. But look at, like, Allegheny County or Hamilton County, where $3 million for them, that's, like, huge. That's a tremendous increase.
Regressive tax, actually.
Yeah,
and that's how it works out. And again, it's small things where people are like, well, these are essential programs, and we've got to have them, and they do so much good, and then it adds up and adds up and adds up. And hopefully, the planners hope, we're able to continue pillaging the people who have built up wealth to be able to fund these. Yeah. But someday, that ride is going to come to an end.
Yeah.
Eventually.
I am a firm believer that the income tax should be gone, and entirely gone. And replaced with a sales tax.
Sales tax?
Yep. Here, here.
Yep. And I think that that allows people to hold and keep their money. They're not being taxed on money they're not spending. If you want to save it in retirement, 401k, whatever, which there are ways that you can like put it in pre-tax, but then you pay taxes on it later. So you're always paying tax. But I don't think that there should be any tax other than when you spend your money. Now, maybe. I've seen some economists suggest that 3% would cover like a federal budget if there was no tax exempt status.
Right, right.
Because what we have today is we have a lot of organizations that are exempt from sales tax. And even me as a small business, if I purchase something for resale, I don't pay sales tax. The end consumer pays the sales tax. So if we switch to a system where there's no exemption from sales tax, I think that that would change things, and it would probably actually give better consumer relations, because now you have this idea of a product isn't changing hands 20 times to get to the end consumer, because then the tax is too much.
Maybe. I got to tell you, I don't like sales tax. No. It's regressive.
Okay.
Well, because the average consumer is going to end up paying like more, like the lower class and working class and middle class consumers will probably end up paying more, just as much in sales taxes as the upper class. So it ends up being regressive in terms of percentage of income. And you know what's going to happen? You put on like a VAT tax at a national level. We're like, oh yeah, this will be a replacement for the income tax.
Yeah.
Well, no,
yeah.
It's not.
No. So let me rephrase.
That's like socialism. That's
a world that doesn't exist today. Yes, because you're right. It'll be like the thruway, right? Oh, that'll go away after so many years. There won't be tolls on the thruway.
Yeah,
fool me once.
Kevin's right. No country has ever enacted a VAT to replace the income tax, where the income tax ever went away. Yeah. So what do you think about a flat tax, guys?
That's probably better. Well, I think it's better than a VAT tax, for sure, because it's less regressive, it's flat. You know, you pay the same percentage of your income. It is what it is.
Yeah, I guess. I'm just I would rather pay tax as I spend my money. That's just it. I don't want to be taxed like – so when I talk with friends in Europe – now, granted, their income tax is way less than ours, but their VAT tax is more.
Yeah.
So it's – yeah, it goes back and forth. But when I explain to them how income tax works here, they look at me with a horrified look on their face and they say, so your country punishes you for working and being successful.
They're sure right.
And I'm like, yes, exactly. They're like, oh, that's awful. We don't want that. You know, so and if you were to look at the history of the Constitution, the income tax wasn't even constitutional for up until, was it the 20s, I think?
1913.
Yeah. That's
they had to amend it.
Yeah, they had to amend it. We had roads, we had schools, we had a whole bunch of stuff without income tax. So that's just where I look at. You know that, but I get to your point. Your point is, if you have a bunch of money and you didn't spend it, you're paying less in taxes. But I would say that most of the people that I've seen who have a lot of money, they spend their money pretty good. They spend their money pretty good.
No, I mean that's a fair point. I just think, again, in terms of percentage of income, it's probably not the best way to do it. Either a flat tax or a much less steep progressive income tax is probably where I'm at. Or just, you know, taxation is theft and we get rid of the government. And yeah, you guys did invite a libertarian on this show. So I'm only half joking.
Yeah, he meant to say taxation's extortion. That was the half part. There you go. But awesome. All right. Well, I think we're going to take a quick break here, and we will be back here in a moment on Radio Free New York.
Kevin Wilson will rejoin us here on Radio Free New York on WISL 92.1 FM, the new 95.5 FM West, and News Power 1040 AM WISL. Don't go away.
You're listening to the voice of Liberty. AM 1040 Avon Rochester, FM 92.1 Rochester, FM 95.5 Spencerport, and WYSL1040.com everywhere.
For 57 years, it's been the late winter break, the early sign of spring that brings a smile to the face of every member of the family. Folks all over the Northeast wouldn't miss it. A visit to Cartwright's Maple Tree Inn, nestled in the forest outside Angelica, New York. If you haven't discovered this special destination, you don't know what you're missing. The Maple Tree Inn specializes in one thing only: buckwheat pancakes served family style, topped with the Cartwright family's signature maple syrup from the thousands of taps in the maple grove right outside the restaurant. Eggs as you like them, maple milkshakes, and the Cartwright's own seasoned sausage are great accompaniments. The rustic setting and the scenic trip to the Maple Tree Inn are all part of the fun. Find out why families regularly make the trek from Rochester, Buffalo, all over the Southern Tier, even Canada, Germany, and Japan, just to experience this special treat. Cartwright's Maple Tree Inn, only open February 12th to April 14th. 585-567-8181. Get more information and driving directions at cartwrightsmapletreeinn.com.
This is Dom Genova, owner of Genesee Valley Chrysler Dodge Jeep and Genesee Valley Ford in Avon, your no-nonsense car dealer. Looking for a good used car? You know what's typical. Lots of hype in the ads, car lots with tons of cars you have to pick through like produce from yesterday's flea market, no guarantee of quality, and commission salespeople trying to make you pay more. But it doesn't have to be that way. At Genesee Valley, we're your no-nonsense used car dealer, too. We take pride in our used cars and trucks just the same as our new. You never have to pick over lesser quality cars and trucks because we won't offer them. And what's more important, our non-commissioned salespeople will help you get into the right vehicle for you at the right payment for your family. Genesee Valley Chrysler Dodge Jeep and Genesee Valley Ford, your no-nonsense used car dealer. Genesee Valley. Exit 10, Route 390 in Avon. GenesseeValley.com.
Hey, this is Mark Stein.
Hi, this is Dennis Miller.
For the Adorable Deplorable Tour, live on stage at the Kodak Center in Rochester on March the 1st for one wild night. Go to www.adorabledeplorabletour.com or call Ticketmaster 1-800-745-3000.
1-800-745-3000, and we will see you there.
See you there.
That's the Adorable Deplorable Show.
Addiction replaced my kids, my marriage, and my family. I couldn't hold it all together, and I was too stubborn to ask for help. I lost everything. One day, my brother took me to the Open Door Mission. I was a mess, but they saw me as a person of worth. I felt restored. I got a great full-time job, and my family accepted me back. Thank you, Open Door Mission.
Open Door Mission, restoring hope and changing lives.
You're listening to Radio Free New York
on the WYSL stations.
Andrew Hollister has stepped away because of some other commitment. So you got Bob Savage joined in studio by Kevin Wilson, Monroe County Chair of the Libertarian Party, and also the host of a pretty darn swell webcast. And is it just a podcast or are you live too?
No, we're live. We're on 106.3 FM over on... in Rochester. So if you're in the city, you can hear us.
Oh, way more than a just a podcast.
Yeah. And you can catch the podcast on OutsideTheEchoChamber.show. I will have the new episodes up there, I promise.
So what do you want, 106.3?
Yeah, well, we're on Saturday mornings at 9 a.m. if you want to catch us live. Me and a guy named Sean Phelan, we're on there. He
He keeps it interesting.
Sean's a lot of fun.
Yeah, no, he's I know he's been – he's called into shows on WYSL before. Yeah, has he been in here?
No, he hasn't been physical here, but we've talked to him, and he's extremely entertaining. So how long is the show? Is it an hour?
It's an hour show, yeah. Okay. So he'll pop in. He'll say radical things, and then I try to keep the conversation on track.
He throws the bomb, and you try to defuse it.
I come in, and I have a plan, and I'm going to talk about stuff, and then Sean comes in and throws a monkey wrench in that, and then that's the show. That's
So can people call in?
They can call in, too. So, again, if you listen to either RochesterFreeRadio.com or you go to 106.3 FM in the city, you can catch our show. And we have the recordings, or we'll have the recordings on OutsideTheEchoChamber.show. And,
Nifty. All right. Well, we got to make a point to listen to that.
Yeah. And just while we're doing pluggables, again, just follow me on Twitter, too, because I usually post about the shows on there, at Kevin Wilson ROC.
Cool. So, all right. By the way, my compliments about your T-shirt.
Got the
Kevin has got he's got a T-shirt. Yeah, he's got a T-shirt that is it's blue, and then it's got a yellow imprint, and there's the Statue of Liberty, and it reads "Don't tread on anyone."
Yeah,
like that.
Not just me. Anyone.
Anyone.
Yeah. That's a libertarian motto that we have. So we had these printed up for the Monroe County Libertarian Party a while back.
It's a good one.
Yeah. All right, so anyhow, back to this up. For those of you just joining us again, Andrew had to step out, and we forgot to say that he wasn't going to be here for the second half of the show, and I'd be guest hosting him for his show for the last half an hour. So you got me, Kevin Wilson, chair of the Monroe County Libertarian Party here, hanging out, talking politics.
I didn't want to say anything in the first half hour because then everybody would just tune out until you came on.
Yeah, I
know. They would just stampede away from Andrew because they couldn't wait to hear you.
Yeah, I'm sure that's how it would go. Exactly. Well, thank you for everyone who is still listening on 1040 and online as well.
And on 92.1 and out west and heading out as far as Orleans County, the all-new 95.5.
Oh, yeah. It's been so long since I've been in studio here. I almost forgot about that one. That's awesome.
Yeah, since September.
Yeah, that's great. So anyway, the conversation with Andrew got me thinking about one topic that I think is interesting to see how Republicans and Democrats are shifting on nowadays, right? That Venezuela, a lot of people are talking about, should the U.S. intervene in Venezuela, right? And I think it's pretty strongly on the libertarian side, the answer is no. I don't think that we're the cause of their problems either. That's a different discussion, but no, we shouldn't get involved. And it was interesting to see, last night, I think the Senate had voted to condemn President Trump's actions in Syria and Afghanistan. That the Senate said that it wasn't a wise move to pull our troops out of those countries and that we should continue to be there to fight the Taliban and ISIS. Well, I'm
counter the conventional wisdom, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it's
that we're this big interfering, you know, constantly meddling in other countries.
Yeah, well, it's so funny because now that we have a president who's trying to pull out of these conflicts using a resolution authorizing force from 2001, now the Senate's speaking up and saying they don't want that. And again, we're in a position where the United States Senate has not declared war since World War II.
Yeah, December 8th, 1941, last time.
That's right. So now we have the Senate who voted to condemn President Trump from pulling out of these countries, and we have it's bipartisan too. I think that a lot of Democrats who might normally be anti-war are now shifting over and saying, well, because it's President Trump making these actions, we're going to cheer the Senate saying that we should still be in war in these countries.
I think it's even more cynical than that. A lot of very lucrative military contracts in those countries.
I think so.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, we have a veteran on this station of both the Mideast War, and Desert Storm, and also Afghanistan. That's Colonel Paul Simonelli. And an example is a perimeter road was built by a military contractor, some obviously politically connected company here in the States, built this 4-lane highway all around Afghanistan. Well, they're not. It's not maintained.
No.
It's very harsh weather in Afghanistan and parts of it. So this road is, you know, falling apart from disuse. But how many billions of dollars do we spend on it?
I want to think about it. No, it's exactly what it is, though. It's we've spent so much money in these places, and you're probably right. Well, I'm sure you are right that they're politically connected people who pressure people in the Senate and the House of Representatives to keep us into these conflicts. And that's incredibly unfortunate because I don't think that it serves the interest of the United States or servicemen and women or the taxpayers to have us be in these conflicts without an end goal. Right, I think you could make a stronger case if you have an end goal, but I don't know that the mission is clear anymore.
Yeah, what is the mission? I mean, just here in Rochester, New York, just consider Harris.
Yeah,
what's the primary product that they generate? It's military radios.
Yeah,
extremely high end, extremely high tech, but that's what they make. I mean, they're completely out of the broadcast business. I'm talking to you through a Harris console right now, that was a separate division. It's not made in Rochester, but I mean, it was the same company. They've completely gotten out of that. They sold the broadcast stuff. And
so it's just military communications. Just
100% military.
Yeah, no, I mean, and there's a strong incentive for those types of companies to pressure our representatives to stay in these conflicts. And I don't like it. And again, I'm so terribly disappointed that the anti-war Democrats didn't come back. I'm so terribly disappointed. I was hoping that's what was going to happen. That the libertarian in me is like, all right, great, we're gonna be against the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan and in Yemen and whatever other dozen countries that we're in now. And somehow President Trump is leading the way on this.
Yeah, well, he's just such a tempting target. But you know, I mean, Democrat Party, Kevin, this ain't your grandpa's Oldsmobile anymore. You know, it's not the same Democrat party. It's really been taken over by extreme leftists.
No, it's so cynical too. Like, well, so you got like the cynical folks who again are just opposing because they're partisan, because like their guy isn't doing it. And I could see that on immigration, on any number of issues too. And it's just incredibly frustrating to see that. And then you got the activist radicals, the Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, and you got people like Elizabeth Warren who are trying to push same thing we were talking about last hour. They're trying to the push the soak the rich kind of policies. Like, oh well, if we just attack this small group, we're going to win support from the general population, be able to secure the Democratic nomination. And in Elizabeth Warren's case, not so much in AOC's case yet.
Well, yeah. She's getting there. Right now, it's very telling, and it's so fascinating that 1 month into her first term, her own party is trying to primary her.
Yeah.
That's hilarious.
No, it's going to be a rough 2 years for her. But she can probably do it, though. As long as she can survive a primary, no one's ever going to kick her out of that seat. No independent Republican is going to win in that spot.
No, certainly not. I mean, Joe Crowley was applauding her, the guy that she defeated in the primary. So
yeah,
she's got this populist wave that's going on. How long that's going to be sustainable remains to be seen. I think that right now we've got, of course, the mainstream media is extremely carrying water for her in a major way,
yeah,
as Trump would say, bigly. And that's just that's going to wear really thin very quickly. Can you imagine if Sarah Palin were AOC, the fun that the late night comics would have with AOC?
Oh, yeah. They'd do all sorts of stuff with her. But she's not, and she is a Democrat, and they're going to let it pass. And that's what it bugs me. Again, to see like the media giving her so much cover as well. But it also, I got to tell you, it does bug me. And we're doing it right now. Conservatives and libertarians also won't stop talking about her. And we keep building up her name more. And here we are talking about her more.
Well, she's very tempting.
I know. The ideas are so bad, we have to address them.
She's kind of like Joe Biden on speed as far as the gas machine is concerned.
I love it. But, oh, man, I don't like giving her so much attention, but that's what it's kind of you got to the point that we were making in the last segment. You have to address why socialism is bad and why capitalism is good. And I think she's, for better or worse, the vanguard of a
younger movement of people who are scared. They're scared for their future, and they're turning the radical ideologies that they think will give them some comfort, that's going to give them some security. And
well,
that's exactly what socialism is, yeah.
In the educational system, they've been told that socialism is just fine and that the evils in the world proceed from capitalism and greedy corporations. Yeah. And they don't stop to think that corporations are not some monolith that exists in and of itself. Corporations are people.
Yeah. Well, in corporations, again, a lot of times they make their money by serving other people. They make their money by providing a product or service that you're interested in. Apple makes its money because you like buying iPhones. Howard Schultz got his money in Starbucks because people wanted to buy Starbucks coffee for some reason. You know, that it's capitalism provides goods and services for far cheaper than we were able to get before capitalism as a concept really came into its own. And that's the other thing that people always forget is that in the last 100 years, global poverty has dropped by an incredible amount. It's a miracle. And it bugs me to say – the socialists say, well, in the last 20 years since capitalism has gotten more robust, that the rich are getting richer and the poor are getting poorer. That is not true. The poor are not getting poorer. The poor are actually getting much, much wealthier. They're living comfortable lives. They have heating. They have electricity. They have access to technology.
They have 75-inch OLED TVs.
Well, I don't have one yet. I got to steal one from a rich guy.
You're not on welfare. No, I'm just being glib, lazy. Keep those cards and letters. But no, it's a valid point, Kevin Wilson. The citizens of the United States citizens of most Western countries live better than the monarchs of the Enlightenment.
Yeah. I would not trade places with Andrew Carnegie 100 years ago. He didn't have heat. He didn't have an Android phone. He didn't have a laptop. We live better than the kings and queens of centuries ago. You're right.
No question about it. Radio Free New York. Kevin Wilson, chairman of the Libertarian Party in Monroe County, will return in just a moment.
When you shop at the Iyed family of dealerships, it's more than just getting a great deal on a vehicle. You get an award-winning service department that always has your back. You're also supporting the local community because community support is one of our core values. From charities to pro and youth sports teams to organizations, clubs, and sponsorships, the Iyed family of dealerships gives back. So by supporting us, you support them. And you can feel good about that. So when you're in the market for a vehicle, visit the Iyed family of dealerships. We'd love to earn your business.
Radio Free New York on WYSL. AM 1040, FM 92.1, and FM 95.5 West.
Speaking of the Enlightenment, it's sad to say, Kevin, I think we need a second one, you know, because young people have been so malinformed by higher education. They've been so lied to by the education establishment.
Yeah, no, you're right. But, hey, you know, good thing. People can go out and they can find the information. We just got to get in front of them, right? They're listening to shows like this, listening to Andrew talk about all sorts of different issues every week when he has this show, and knowing that there are other great resources online, like the Foundation for Economic Education and Cato and other things. You can find this. I think we've got to be forthright in communicating it, right? And people are nervous. I think the pro-free market crowd, conservatives, libertarians, sometimes get nervous that they're losing the moral high ground to socialism, and they're not. You need to remember what's actually happening and why we're able to live the lives that we're able to live nowadays is because of free markets and capitalism.
Yeah. The greatest beneficial force to have been bestowed on mankind ever. It has raised people out of poverty and ignorance now for 250 years, and the process is only accelerating. I mean, this is why we have great medical care. This is why Occupy Wall Street can rail against capitalism and then hop on their iPhone and quick get whatever information they need from the web, which was created by capitalism.
Yep. Now, all that stuff, and again, we can't concede that point. We can't concede the moral high ground to say, like, well, socialism would be nice. I'm like, no, it wouldn't. Like, how it actually happens in real life is brutal. And again, I'm going to sound like an anarchist for a little bit. I don't mean to, but I'm going to sound like an anarchist a little bit. Is that how government works? How government redistributes and controls people's income, and how the government controls the economy is always at the point of a gun.
And that's something that we should never forget. I'm not an anarchist. I'm a small government libertarian. But whenever I'm advocating for some kind of law or some kind of program, I always think, how is that money going to be required? And how is the government going to get that, right? So if, again, anytime the government has a fee or a tax and you refuse to pay that, what ends up happening?
Yeah, it moves to the next stage. You don't pay the fee or the tax, then what happens is government says, we're going to seize your property in order to satisfy this fee or this tax. Then when they come to kick you out of your house or to seize your business, some people just get to the point where they just resist, and at that point, you're right. That's when the gun comes out.
Yeah, that's where the gun comes out. And that's something I kind of regret not asking when I was on the radio show with the socialists. It's like, well, if I don't give you my car, how are you going to get it? Are they going to be honest about it? Are they going to tell me how the government actually operates, that the government is going to democratically seize my assets at the point of a gun?
Yeah, and again, the device that you use to defeat that entire argument, to show how illogical it is you just turn it around. You say, okay, so you use my car. Can I have your house for the weekend? Yeah, go stay downtown at the at some hotel, pick it out, and I'm just going to take over your house because I got a bunch of people I want to party with them in your house.
Oh, each according to his need, Bob.
Well, okay, we'll see how that works. Let's just put that to the test.
We'll let democracy decide who needs what, and it's going to work out fine.
So I've got 15 friends here who say that they want your house. So 15. Is 15 times one, and you're just you, so I guess I win that argument.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
Hey, I mean, you keep going around in circles with this, and that's how it always ends up, though. Do you want to be able to have the right to be able to keep the stuff that you've built, right?
And it's not even based on stuff, necessarily. It's just based upon the naked application of force. Example, right. In the most recent snowstorm that we had, you're driving along I-390, I-490, you see the electric message boards, and King Cuomo says, no trucks and buses on interstates starting 3 p.m. Excuse me, I believe that under the Constitution we have freedom of movement. We have freedom to assemble and go wherever we want to. You don't order us a certain category of vehicle not to use public roads. If the roads are not safe, if there's a safety consideration, then you close the roads.
Yeah.
But I know this is a school of thought thing. I understand the argument about how high-profile vehicles are more vulnerable in strong winds. I understand all that stuff. But so if you decide that you've got a critical load of, let's say, medicines, surgical supplies or whatever, and that's got to get to Cleveland, you hop on that thruway anyway.
Yeah.
What happens? The government says you're under arrest and I'm going to take over your truck. And if you don't take over your truck, out comes the gun again.
So it is. When you see someone's stuff, that's how the process works. And yeah, King Cuomo thinks he can just do that without any consequence or even resistance, which is probably accurate. But yeah, I mean, with trucking too, it's such a delicate thing to understand. Like, you don't know what those payloads are. You don't know what is in those trucks. Like, what if it is essential? What if it really needs to get to that place just in time? And because that's how a lot of our shipping process works right now, is that stores can be empty, medicine doesn't get delivered unless their trucks are moving.
Well, it just so happens that the accident, the 21-car crash near Batavia, involved a tractor-trailer truck.
Yeah.
What we're hearing is the truck caused the accident. Who knows? I mean, I don't know that, but that's what the reports are. But are you telling me that cars never cause accidents? Cars cause accidents all the time. And let's be realistic. The stretch of thruway between the Pennsylvania line and Batavia is a problem every winter.
Yeah, it is. That's always a mess. The wind cuts right through there.
Things happen. I mean, sometimes there's accidents.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, that it's a tough one, right? And then
Reasonable minds can differ about that. Maybe I didn't pick the best example in the world, but that's what I'm talking about. I guess probably the gun restrictions are maybe a more glaring example.
That's a big one. What's coming out of the Senate and Assembly nowadays is it's spooky, and I don't like it.
Well, what's happened is you've turned a bunch of 8-year-olds loose in Baskin Robbins. they're just all going nuts.
They sure are. I don't know. probably most of this stuff I don't like, particularly the gun stuff coming out of New York State right now.
I mean, I am a libertarian. The marijuana stuff that may or may not come out, like, I'm a little bit more of a fan of. And I think I've been pretty open that that's marijuana should be legalized, that you also shouldn't be putting people in jail with using government force for smoking, distributing, selling marijuana. But the other stuff, the red flag laws, the I'm trying to think of what else came out now. The
bump stocks.
Yep, the bump stocks that came out.
The increase in the waiting periods.
Mm-hmm, all that stuff. I don't know. I'm not sure if I want to open up the can of worms that is the abortion law. Because that one's the Libertarian Party is the platform is pro-choice. I think this one is very tricky, but I understand why people are upset.
Oh, are you talking about abortion now?
Yeah, the New York State abortion law. I'm just talking about the general stuff that New York State's been doing now that the Senate and the Assembly are both firmly in control of the Democrats, that they're going to go nuts.
Well, I think the abortion issue, which of course nobody's ever going to agree on that, but I mean, it's a stark illustration and possibly the most graphic illustration of the concept of someone's rights trampling on someone else's rights. When you declare that, woman's right to choose. You had that right to choose when you had unprotected sex. Now you have a creature living inside your body for a period of time, which has completely separate DNA,
right.
Is identifiably a different human being from you. And now we're talking about a woman's right to choose trumping the rights of an unborn, or actually in the case of the Virginia law, a recently born human being. That's indefensible.
Virginia governor one, I was like, man, that sure did make it sound bad, didn't it?
Sounds bad because it is bad.
Yeah. I mean, if you haven't heard what the Virginia governor said, he basically just said, like, well, we would, birth the baby and leave it out on a table and then have a discussion with the mother.
Or keep it comfortable and we'll have a discussion. A discussion about what?
Yeah,
about whether to murder the child or not?
I feel like at that point in time, the ship's kind of sailed. I haven't seen if he's walked that back any, but that...
Oh, no, he's doubled down on it.
He's doubled down on
it. Oh, yeah.
I'm generally pro-choice. That one might be a little bit too far for me.
You got a living, breathing human being outside the mom now, and we're going to have a discussion about whether she wants it?
Yeah.
What?
No, at that point in time, like, I know there's...
And where's the father in all this? There was in this, none of this calculus, was there any mention anywhere of the father?
Yeah. No, I mean, at that point in time, yeah, you have to have that discussion. I'm like, the baby's out, the baby's alive. Like, if it's one of those situations, and I know these happen where... Like, and it's been part of the discussion for third trimester abortions that the baby isn't going to survive very long. Like, that's different. But, like, once you have the baby out, like, you got to keep it comfortable. You got to do what you can to keep that
baby. The baby doesn't survive very long. Yeah. But the baby deserved to be on this planet because the baby was delivered. I know whereof I speak. I had a niece, a newborn niece who lived 22 days.
Oh, man. That's awful. I mean, 22 sometimes days you got, but
bad things happen. But yeah. I mean that child was on this planet for 22 days for a reason.
Yeah. Oh man,
not for us to decide.
No, I know that's always a tough one. I always get tripped up with that one with the abortion issue because people believe that life begins at different points, and you can't convince anyone that their position is incorrect on that. That life matters, like that the choice of the mother matters differently than the right of that child to exist.
I'm not, I'm not given to making predictions, but I am going to predict in 50 years, 75 years time when I'm long gone, I think that this country is going to look back on this abortion debate and it's going to be an issue of the magnitude of slavery.
I think so.
I do.
Yeah. I mean, I think that if we develop the technology, as technology continues to advance to be able to allow fetuses to live outside of the mother, I think that's definitely going to change the nature of the debate. But that's kind of beyond where we are now, and that's a little bit different.
What's really changed the nature of the debate, Kevin, is HD, full-color, 3D sonograms.
Yeah.
These parents, these folks... can look at that child and there is absolutely no question that that is not a non-viable clump of cells. That's a human being in there. Mm. And now with DNA, now that we apply that analysis, we know that that child has a completely separate DNA string, easily distinguishable from the mom. So,
yeah. I mean, Bob, why did I start a tricky debate?
I don't know, but you know what?
What did I do?
it's illustrative. And just like that, wouldn't you know, we're out of time.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Thanks to Andrew for letting me guest host for him today. And thanks for Bob for letting me be in the studio.
Hey, good job. Oh, Kevin Wilson, ladies and gentlemen, give it up for Kevin.
All right. Well, I guess if you want to find me, go to OutsideTheEchoChamber.show for my other show, and follow me on Twitter @KevinWilsonROC. Love to talk to you guys.
Thanks, Kevin. See you next time.